Okay, welcome to our latest Olympic show for Women's Soccer Zone. Delighted to have you with us once again, and I have a lovely group of guests to join me on this episode. As always, I am joined by our piece of the furniture, JJ Duke. JJ, how you doing, mate?
I'm still feeling Olympic, Kieran, but maybe a little more depressed than before, or maybe just coffee-powered.
Yeah, and actually, our other guests probably can feel your pain, because we're also joined by a couple of people from the women's game who are actually out in Brazil. Anne O'Dong, who people will know have been on the show before, and Sarah Grube, who is making her debut. Guys, I would ask how you are, but I think I know what the answer is going to be.
Yeah, look, Kieran, I think, JJ, we need to form a support group, because I think there's a couple of us in the same boat at the moment in terms of just how we're feeling. It's a day after the game and you're always just so flat.
Yeah, I was just wondering, what is the name of the place that we are in at the moment? There's some type of grieving going on. I don't know where my voice has gone. I think I left it in the Manyaro Stadium last night. I'm drowned out, of course, by so many Brazilians. But, yeah, it's been a pretty spectacular day or two, hasn't it?
I'm still in shock. So I'm still in that first shock.
We'll talk about your games shortly. We're gonna leave the two games that went to penalties to the end, because obviously we've got you guys on, and Linda Eriksson, our Swedish correspondent, is going to join us a little bit later. She's currently delayed, but she'll be joining us on the call in a little while. So I understand it's not going to be easy to talk about the games that you guys were involved with. So let's leave those ones to the end. Let's kick off with the game between France and Canada. Many expected, I think, France to go through in this one, but I think a few perceptions were maybe changed after the way that Canada performed in the group stage. I'm not going to brag, but I did predict on the last show that Canada would beat France. It was just an inkling that I had, which is actually different to how I would have predicted it at the start of the tournament, because I can quite happily say now I did have France meddling, although I won't say where I had them meddling. JJ, I'll start with you, mate, because you got to see quite a lot. In fact, you got to see all of the game. What did you make of it, and how surprised were you with how well Canada played, and maybe how France didn't exert themselves on the game as much as maybe we would have expected them to?
Well, first off, I'm happy to say that my bottom half of the bracket is still quite intact, and my gold medalist is still much in the running, so at least if there's any sort of consolation, I'm happy about that. Look, I think Canada, they continued to do what they have been doing in this tournament. It hasn't been flashy up front. It's been more of a strict defensive mindset in the back. LeBay has been so solid. Her back four, even though there's been some rotating cast of players either missing out due to injury or missing out due to card accumulation or suspension, they didn't break again. France showed width. They showed their pace. They were beat once on a brilliant counterattack, and that was really about it, to be quite honest with you. Canada, again, they dug down deep, they got the result, and you know, they're not so much of a surprising team anymore. This has been something a long time coming now, with John Herdman, you know, completing this four-year cycle, or now I should say entering his second cycle as he took over the team in 2012, and they're a team that are very much on the rise, and it shouldn't be a shock for them to be here.
Yeah, we'll talk about the goal in a second. But Anne and Sarah, I know it's very difficult. I was out at the World Cup with you last year, and it's actually very difficult to follow all of the games when you're following a particular team. Obviously, you guys are out there covering Australia. I know you didn't get to see the game, but when you saw the result come through and everything that surrounded it, what was your kind of reaction and your views? Because, as I said, so many people expected France to do well once again. They fall short in a knockout match.
Yeah, to be honest, I wasn't surprised. I mean, if you have a look at the history of France, going back from the Euros in, I think, 2009, heading onto the World Cup in 2011, the Euros in 2013, the Olympics in 2012, France haven't sorted out their mental issues in how to deal with favouritism and pressure at major tournaments. And until they can do that, teams will go in feeling like they're in the game with France, and I absolutely think Canada did. And you look at the way we were able to see Canada through three matches. We faced them in one and felt what they could do in that very first one. And we also saw France up against New Zealand in groups. We were both talking about just how pedestrian they looked. I mean, they looked like they could have another couple of gears, but they never actually switched those gears.
Yeah, it was a very lackluster performance, given that they really could have turned it on. We didn't see any spark from them. We thought they might be saving something up, but they didn't show a whole lot of promise. Even when Aberley came into the game in the second half, they didn't switch things on. Certainly from Canada's perspective, I think we saw that breakthrough tournament that we had in 2012, and of course sort of grounded out for snuck through the back gate against France really to get that medal after their heroic performance in the semi-final against the US. But if you can see what Herdman's done to that team in the last few years, being able to take some of the youth to pop in around some of those perhaps weaker positions that he had back in 2012, but he's maintained that spine of experience all the way through the team, and with those anchors of Schmidt and Matheson, Sinclair seems to be coming into her own in these last few months, obviously shaking off some of those lower limb injuries that she had in that off-season there after the World Cup. So, yeah, you've got a team from Canada that's building. It's got a much stronger strategy than it certainly had in 2012, and they know how to win, which is something, in these tournaments, we talk about it a lot, it's that mentality, and they know how to get over the line when there's another team in their face.
And we spoke about it with the Australia game. In that very, very first game, Australia came to play, and they came to play football. Canada came to win, and that's what they did.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. JJ, Sarah makes a really good point there about how John Herdman's made those changes and how he's blended in those young players. One of those players is Janine Becky. We spoke on the last episode about how, for us, you, Linda and myself, all agreed she was arguably the player of the first round. Again, influential in that game yesterday, set up the goal for Sophie Schmidt. Not just her, but how surprised or how well has John Herdman done in blending in those new players? Because it was a case of, it wasn't just one or two, it was probably half a team that he pushed to one side. We've mentioned those players like your Carl Moscatos, your Lauren Sesselmans, your Adriana Leons, and he's brought in the likes of Ashley Lawrence, like Janine Becky, like Rebecca Quinn, and they've settled in so quickly. Is that a surprise, or is that credit to John Herdman?
Well, it's credit to John Herdman because of the fact that he's given those players confidence. And by doing so, he's played them in big matches, whether they be high-profile friendlies or, as you and I even talked about back in February again, played them basically a B-plus lineup against the United States A team in the CONCACAF Olympic qualifier, the final. Now, granted, did that match mean a whole lot? No, because both teams are already through. But he played a inexperienced team in the sense of, you look at it, 18, 19, 20-year-olds, lots of collegiate players going at it against the U.S. A team, and they hung right in there. And I think, again, when you give players, especially young ones, confidence, you give them experience, not in a throwaway game, but in something that means a little bit more, whether it is, again, that regional rivalry or the games that they played in the lead-up to this tournament, playing two matches against Brazil, went over to France. If you give those players that experience and you give them the support, they're going to start believing in themselves, and then you reap the rewards on the field. I mean, you take a look yesterday, that match. The ball played over the top. It's a looping ball to Becky. She puts that on a platter, lobs a defender, and then hits a perfect ball off the half volley to the back post, where then you have a more clinical finisher with experience that knows to get the ball into a good spot and put it in the back of the net, and Sophie Schmidt. And I think that little moment of brilliance, that's just been things that have been building and building. And when you have all these factors coming forward, I think, it all comes down to what John Herdman has done in his now 5 years, or nearly close about 5 years of putting his stamp on the team.
Yeah, absolutely.
What John Herdman has done with Canada over the last 4 years in building those memories and big game memories into his players. And when you do that, as players talk about muscle memory and how they're able to perform and that kind of thing, I think the same thing happens with mental memory. You can build that in how to perform in big games. And then when you've got those big games and those big moments, you can pull that out. I think, you know, for a team like France, they've almost got the opposite. They've almost got the scars of those big games. And when the moments come, it's like, uh-oh, here we go again. While Canada now, it's like, all right, we know how to do this. We know what to do in this situation and just execute.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess one of the things that people were reacting on Twitter about was this France team being in a comfort zone when it comes to domestic football. We know that the large majority of that team is made up of Lyon, and we know that Lyon team pretty much walks at a canter every single game that they have in the French league, and it's only when they come up against opposition in the Champions League, and it's probably the later rounds of the Champions League, when they are actually tested. Now, we know that Lyon won the Champions League. We know that PSG, who are another club who have representation in that French team, got to the Champions League final the year before. So these players are not unused to big games, and they're not unused to winning. Why is it, I guess my final question on the French team, why is it that they are unable to translate or transition that form for their clubs into the national team? And are we now seeing a team that's in danger of potentially falling behind other teams like Australia, who they've been ahead of for a large period of time, because those players don't move away and because they're in a comfort zone in their own domestic league? And that's to either of you.
Well, I guess if you can answer that question, you'd be the coach of the French national team. Look, that is something they have to sort out. And I really do think, you know, one of the best things that happened to French football was the investment of money into their youth development programs, investment of money into their league programs, and seeing also the clubs start to invest money into women's football. But also one of the worst things that's happened to French women's football is that investment in club football. Because as you said, a lot of the players just now migrate to that one or two clubs and therefore don't challenge themselves. And that comfort zone also means that they don't go outside of France. They don't play outside of France. You look at a lot of the German team or a lot of, well, pretty much all of the Australian team, the Canadian team, they all play outside of their own country and outside of the comfort zone of that. I think for France now, it's, look, they've got a lot of really good youth players coming through. They just won the Euro under-19s. They're probably going to do really well in the under-20s Women's World Cup and the under-17s coming up. They've definitely got the talent coming through. Mentally, they've just got to sort that out and start to challenge their players.
Yeah. And I think just to add on to that, it's about finding that killer mentality and the winning mentality. And I know I mentioned it on the last show, reviewing the group stage, that the American broadcast brought up a point about Amandine Henry, where she said one of the reasons why she came over to play here in the United States is to find out what it is about having that winning mentality that for years, obviously not so much in this tournament, but what the U.S. have done to get themselves to that next level. And I think that's really something that France needs. And brings up the great point about the fact that, you know, France has put in so much money into developing women's football over there, but at the same time, sure, you're winning club, but are you winning a national team and using those club players who, as Karen, you said, who just walk around the park basically, you know, 7 times out of 8 every, you know, 7 out of every 8 matches, and then they do have a challenge, and, you know, they can rise up to that challenge, but they don't ever feel that pressure. When their backs are against the wall in 3 years from now in France 2019, the World Cup, and when they have this support and the backing, hopefully, of that entire nation, how are they going to rise to that? That's going to be something that they're going to have to find within themselves. I know that the result of this tournament was going to be a big determining factor in who stays, who goes from the team, and who gets brought in. Well, you know, maybe there might be a time to go into that team, dig it up a little bit, bring some fresh faces, bring some new energy, because you never know. But right now, they don't have that.
No, absolutely right. Well, I think we've spoken enough about France. I think absolutely we must congratulate Canada, because they have, I think, proved a lot of people wrong. And I think they were the standout team in the group stages. And they will obviously face Germany in the semi-finals. We'll have a very quick break. And when we come back, we will talk about the Germany game against China. So welcome back, guys. We move on to Germany against China. Now, again, Anne and Sarah, I'll start with you. I know you didn't get to see this game because, as we know, you are out in Brazil covering Australia, but you did get to see Germany in the group stages because, obviously, Australia played against them. It was a 2-2 draw. I've been underwhelmed by Germany, if you want me to be honest. I don't think the forward line has clicked. I think that they showed weaknesses at the back, especially against you guys. I think if Caitlin Ford had had her shooting boots on in that game, you would have probably been 3 or 4 up by half time.
Stop it, Kieran.
But I think one player that's pulled the strings and has been, for me, probably the standout midfielder in the tournament has been Melanie Behringer. I think she has been the player that has kind of grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck and really driven that German team on. And again, it proved that because she was the one that got the winning goal against China. But what have you made of them so far?
Well, Behringer had to. I mean, I don't think you can underestimate how big a loss Simona Lauda has been from that German midfield. She's such a big presence within it, and she allows the likes of Genevieve Marajan to be able to have a little bit more freedom up front and also to be able to work that further up that pitch alongside Mittag and also Pop. And I think that's been a big problem for Germany and they've not been able to solve it. But I also think the other thing that has happened with Germany is almost like a change of mentality. I think with them, with the retirements of so many players who were part of the previous generation, you know, Angora, Sasic, in particular in the last couple of years, but it looks like they've almost lost that German edge in a way. And with the move to, you know, the free-flowing football and everyone's trying to copy France and Japan in playing that total football, they've kind of lost some of the German characteristics that have been so evident in their game.
And so threatening, or what's the word, intimidating, I guess. I mean, what I found watching Germany over the, you know, live over the last week or so is no team has backed down to them. Mm-hmm. Zimbabwe took it absolutely to them, and Germany, I mean, they had a few chances, yes, in that first 22 minutes before they scored. They looked very threatening, Pop, especially floating around that far post, but Zimbabwe didn't back down. Australia, again, absolutely took it to Germany and really sliced through them at will, I think would be fair to say. And in previous years, I think Germany might have put a little bit more stamp of authority on these matches.
Yeah, absolutely. JJ, you said in the last episode about Simone Lauder, pretty much echoing what Anne said about her loss, but could have been very different, couldn't it? Because China had a disputed penalty that Zhuang missed, and could have been very different if that had gone in.
Yeah, it could have. You know, end of the day, everyone nailed it right on the head. Germany, they're not feared anymore. And I think that's really a testament to how much that this game has grown over the last 10 years or so, that, you know, while you still have the bigger names winning these major tournaments, in the group stages and early in the knockouts, you have these teams that maybe years ago they weren't competitors. They're now standing toe-to-toe. And, you know, whether it's this total football style that you guys said earlier, or if it's teams just sticking to what they do best, hitting on the counter, playing with high pressure, what have you, they're doing it. So for China in this match, similarly to Germany, now granted I haven't seen a whole lot of China up until really the last two of their matches, I think there is something that's just missing from the team that we saw last year, that little bit of extra bite to them, where they challenged the U.S. in that knockout match last year in the World Cup. But yeah, if they hit that penalty, then, you know, this is a much different match. And yeah, I think even if there wasn't that strike from Behringer in the second half, then I think that probably would have been the third match that we saw yesterday go to penalties, just to be honest with you. I don't think there was a whole lot separating the two teams. Germany, they miss a lot in Lauder. I don't think that they have a player outside of, well, her and Behringer at the moment that would rise up to the occasion and grab the game, make a change, do something to lead that team. But at the same time, you look at it, they're in the semifinals of a major tournament yet again. So
yeah.
You can't really argue with them being successful and now they also don't have to play France, which is for them massive.
It's the age old saying, isn't it? German efficiency. They are very, very efficient. And it's actually interesting you say about Behringer being that kind of player that pulls the strings. We all agree on that. Laudair being a big miss. Jennifer Marijan is a player that has huge reputation, huge talent. We talk about her every tournament that Germany comes into. And yet she is that player that people will perceive as being the one they assume will grab the game by the scruff of the neck. And I haven't seen it yet.
But she's that player that I feel like is very representative of the new generation of players. You know, she's very skillful. She's probably one of the most technically brilliant players in the world. But it's that whole idea of these millennial players who are coming through where they're schooled in technical aspects of the game. They're very adept tactically, but the mentality is just not there yet. Like, you look at the previous generations of, you know, American players, Australian players, the German players, the previous generation of Brazilian players, and there was this steel and this hardness and that ran through them, as well as everything else about their own games. And I feel like Marijan is that, you know, that pretty player that comes through now, but can they really stand up in the big stage? And unfortunately, she hasn't been able to do so yet. And as that happens more and more, I think people will look at them and start to doubt them more and more.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, there could be a potential argument that she's a bit of a luxury, but actually, she is one of those players that, given the opportunity, she is one of those that can really change a game. And I know you spoke to Bruno Bini before the tournament. I mean, when you look at, they've gone out at the quarterfinal stage, what was, I don't know if you got the chance to ask him, but what was his aim? If it wasn't, if they were going to fall short and not medal, what was the aim that he had in terms of China stamping their mark on this tournament?
He was trying to actually change the Chinese mentality. I mean, we saw at the World Cup in 2015, they were very pragmatic. They were a solid defensive unit, but really they didn't have that much going forward. And he's been trying to turn that around over the last 8-9 months. And he did that reasonably successfully at the Asian women's qualifiers, Olympic qualifiers. They played much more expansively. I mean, in the match against Australia, they were the better side for pretty much all of that game, and Australia managed to jag a goal and finish on top. But really, against Japan, they went at Japan toe-to-toe, as you mentioned. They played expansive football. They were very creative, and it felt like they almost reverted to type in this tournament. They went back to their defensive shell, and they really couldn't get out. And I think if Germany were there for the taking, I mean, Germany weren't great playing great football and were really, really there for the taking. And China will be really, really disappointed with the way they finished this tournament, particularly as they had such high hopes for it in the group that they were.
Yeah, and having performed well in the Asian qualifying as well, obviously finished behind Australia, but when you can outgun Japan and South Korea, that is no easy task. So, yeah, as you say, I'm sure they'll be very disappointed. Well, we didn't manage to get Jasmina Schreimler, who obviously covers German football for us, on the show. She was unavailable, but I did manage to speak to her about the German side, so I'm going to move on and have a little chat with her, and when we come back after the chat with Jasmina, we will move on, Anne and Sarah, to Australia against Brazil. Okay, so I'm delighted to be joined by Jasmina Schreimler, our German correspondent. A very pleased Jasmina, because this morning Germany, of course, defeated China thanks to a hell of a strike from Melanie Behringer. Jasmina, how are you? Are you well?
I'm doing just fine. How are you?
I'm very well. Very tired after being up till 5 o'clock this morning, but we plough on. So, nowhere better to start than the game, of course, and it would be good to get your thoughts. 1-0 win over China could have potentially been a bit different had China converted that disputed penalty, but what's the reaction in Germany and how do you feel going into the semi-final?
Well, I was pretty disappointed by our performance. I thought that we didn't get a clear result against 10 China players, which was just disappointing considering the fact that we had many chances, but, you know, just the usual problems in the German national team. we played too slow. We didn't manage to break through the China defense because of that. Then we gave them the chance to bounce back. And it was just, this tournament so far has been a mess, in my opinion. I mean, you know, I'm glad we are through. I'm glad we won. But I'm just not very happy with what I've seen so far. And the reactions in Germany were kind of similar. You know, everybody pretty much thinks that we just got lucky to be through. And I have to agree, we got lucky, because it could have been completely different if they would have converted the penalty.
I mean, obviously, one of the key things will be the loss of Simone Lauder in that first game against Zimbabwe. One player that has really stepped up to the plate in her absence is Melanie Behringer. How important has she been for this team in helping them get through to the semis?
I'm very gutted for Simone that she's out now, because she had such a rough season, you know, always fighting injuries, not being able to play. So now she was fit and so motivated to compete at the Olympics, and then she gets injured again. So she was one of the players who was really motivated going into the tournament. She wanted to take responsibility and, you know, just show the world that she's back. And now she can't do that. And Melanie Behringer is taking over. She's taking responsibility. She's scoring all of our goals, which is something I certainly didn't expect. But, you know, she's known for goals like that. The goals against China, that's Melanie Behringer. If you let her shoot from far away, she's gonna get a stunner in.
Yeah, very, very much so. Obviously scored a stunning free kick in the game against Zimbabwe as well. You mentioned that she's not kind of the player that you expect to be the kind of leader in this team and driving the team forward. One of the players that many will have expected to do that is Jennifer Marijan. Now, we know the talent that Marijan has. We know that she is, on her day, unplayable. But it could be said that we've not seen the best of her in this tournament. Why is it that when it comes to Marijan and big tournaments, I would say it was the same at the World Cup last year, although I know she had some injury problems during that we don't see the best of her?
Maybe it has something to do with the pressure and the fact that we expect her to do so well, because I expected her to be the player of the tournament, because she didn't play her best season in Frankfurt, I must say that. But at the same time, I feel like she never truly shows up at the big stages, which is surprising to me, because she is one of the best players in the world, but she just doesn't show that when she's playing at such big tournaments, which is just surprising to me too. I don't really understand.
Yeah, maybe, as you say, it could well be pressure. We know that she's a big player. She's of course been shortlisted for the final of the UEFA Best Player in Europe award alongside Amandine Henry and Ada Hegerberg. I mean, I guess final question, you now face Canada again. They beat you in the qualifying group. How do you feel, and what's your prediction?
I'm pretty nervous, because obviously they have already beaten us fair and clear, and Canada are just so confident right now. And they should be. They have all the right to be confident, while we have struggled in every single game, in my opinion. So if we don't step up our game, then that's going to be it for us. But as I said in our last preview show, the German national team is known to have a strong mentality, and I think we will show up now, and that we're going to make it to the final.
Women's Soccer Zone would like to thank our partners, She Kicks Magazine. Subscribe at shekicks.net for even more women's football.
So big thanks there to Jasmina. Of course, Germany will now play Canada in Belo Horizonte on Tuesday. We move on, and this is the counselling session half of the episode.
Absolutely.
The medication is out, and the tissues
are lying on a couch.
Yeah. So we're gonna cover off Sweden and USA last, because we're waiting for Linda Eriksson to be available. So we're gonna move on to the host Brazil against Australia. Now, JJ, obviously, I'm sure you'll respect the fact and appreciate the fact that Anne and Sarah are in a better position, probably having been at the game, to comment, but I know you saw it as well, so I'm not going to completely ignore you, mate. But Anne and Sarah, where do we start? It's worth noting, we wait 20 years for a penalty shootout in a women's Olympic football competition, and then two come along at once, one of them featuring Brazil and Australia. But just sum up your thoughts and your feelings the morning after, the night before.
Look, to be honest, and I say this with great pain, I think it's actually the result that was needed for football on the night. Brazil came out and in front of 50,000 plus supporters actually played a really positive attacking kind of game, and they really didn't show that they were stifled by the expectations. They didn't show that they were going to sit in a shell, and they went at Australia. And I think that put Australia on the back foot early on in the game. Didn't realise Brazil would come out so hard at them. And they were fantastic, particularly when they had lost Cristiani at the beginning of the match. She couldn't quite come up from the hamstring, and I severely doubt that she'll be able to participate much more in the tournament. But Marta came out, she was fantastic. She really did made some surging runs in the game. She really pulled the strings. Caitlin Ford was moved into right back to try and stifle Marta, and I think she did a reasonable job for most of the match. Marta in the first half didn't really quite get as much penetration as she has been getting in the tournament. And from then on, you know, once it got into extra time, it was just all about hanging on for Australia. I mean, they were absolutely shattered and out on their legs. And really, you know, the Matildas' motto is never say die, and they demonstrated that so much on the night with the way they just kept going and kept tracking and really putting in the defence was immense in that game.
Yeah, I think the turning point, Anne, was probably when Steph Catley suffered that injury. We think it's a hamstring injury, and Kellen Knight was forced to move back into left back, which really threw out the Matildas' midfield. And from then on, they really were suffering, I'd suggest, a number of onslaughts from the Brazilian side. I thought Lydia Williams was excellent across the entire entire match. She pulled out saves from every type of angle. I thought she was great on the high ball, punching clear.
Biscuit. In the world at the moment?
Well, certainly from yesterday's game, you'd have to say. Lydia, look, she's had a few weak moments, I think, throughout this tournament, it's fair to say. Early on, particularly against Canada, I thought she had some wobbly boots on, I guess, in one or two of those moments. But yesterday, I thought she was absolutely world class and world leading. And she, of course, kept Australia in the game. Australia had a number of phases where, particularly when they pushed forward up front, and she was able to connect, I thought, there with Heyman, and Gorry became more creative when that partnership took off as well. But, you know, it was a real battle, I think it's fair to say. I think the team that was more dominant on the night came out on top at the end of the penalties. I'm one of those weird people who really loves penalty shootouts. And even though my team... I know, it's weird, isn't it? You talk about mentality. The pain that Australia's feeling now is replaced on the other side by the ecstasy from Brazil. And this result, the significance of this result in world football, I don't think you can underestimate it.
And how cruel would it have been for Marta to miss the penalty that would have sent Brazil out for what she's done for the game in this country? And we've seen it all over the place, you know, from Sao Paulo to Salvador to here in Belo Horizonte. She's really become a national treasure, and you can't begrudge her that. You can't begrudge Cristiani that, Formiga that. They've really, really, you know, suffered in terms of federation support, and so you can't begrudge them this moment in the sun. But you know, as an Australian sitting there, it hurts because you just know how much this team has put in. But on the other side, you know, for a lot of those Brazilian players, they're at the end of their careers and they're at the end of their cycles. And for a lot of Australia's players, this is the start of their four-year cycle going to 2019 and 2020. The average age of the Australian team was 23.7. Youngest team in the tournament, so they've got plenty of learnings. And one thing Grubzia and I have been saying throughout the whole tournament is that it's the first tournament where Australia has come in with real expectations, and learning how to manage that, learning how to win, learning how to play to type is something that they're going to take out of this tournament and are hopefully going to be stronger for it when it comes to 2018, 2019, 2020.
Yeah, agreed. I think JJ and I discussed it on a previous show about this possibly being Brazil's best chance. And I wouldn't ever say last chance, because players will always come through and look to pick up the baton of those that move on. But I look at the team, like you've already mentioned, the likes of Cristiano and Marta and Formiga, you know, they are getting towards the end of their careers, and this could well be their best chance of gaining a gold medal. I think you're right. I think the Australians were superb. You know, they gave as good as they got in a hostile environment, in conditions that will have suited the Brazilians better. I thought they dealt very well with the loss of Steph Catley. I know that she was a big loss, and I was disappointed to see her go off. But at least Kellen Knight was actually a player that I picked out for before the tournament to look out for, because I thought she was excellent at the World Cup last year. And I thought she would be another player that would influence the game, as well as teach Lisa Devanna how to drink out of a water bottle as well. So, you know.
That was so cool.
Such a great light moment.
It was brilliant. It was brilliant. It was brilliant. JJ, I mean, I don't want to leave you out, mate. I know you've waited patiently to have your say. Maybe you can speak from a Brazilian, not that you are Brazilian, but a Brazilian perspective, in that this was really important for them, wasn't it? I think a lot of those players stepped up to the plate. Marta, I thought, was phenomenal throughout. But I think players like Beatrice, I thought Barbara in goal, Fabiana at right back, and Dibinha in midfield, they stepped up to the plate and they made it very difficult for Australia, didn't they?
They did. You know, and I said before that we came on, that was probably one of the most riveting 0-0, 120 minutes of football that I've seen in a long time. It was back and forth. I enjoyed it as a neutral. Personally, I did also select Australia to go through. I thought that they really, you know, this is the start of really what is to come. You know, it's been building for a long time now, obviously, and unfortunately I don't get to see a whole lot of Australian football purely because the time difference and the fact that there's not a whole lot that we can watch on, you know, a YouTube platform or something along those lines. But you're asking about Brazil. This was a match they had to have. I don't think that there's any two ways about it. You look at the support that they had in that massive stadium there. Now they're going to go to the Maracanã, which is the ground, the sacred ground of Brazilian soccer, where legends are born and created. And this is an opportunity now that team, they're going to have at least one match, possibly two if they do win their semifinal, to make their claim, make their statement. And every player that you mentioned, Kieran, they showed up. All 11 starters. And I actually found it a bit surprising that, minus the injury substitution, Vidal did not go to the bench until very, very, very late on. And, you know, with that long trek that they had from Manaus, I think we're kind of overlooking that a little bit, that the two teams that went to the Amazon that advanced to the quarterfinals, they looked fairly fit between both the U.S. and Brazil. Not a whole lot of, you know, missed legs in there, but you know, the fact that Marta's running down the right flank in the 118th or 119th minute, taking on all comers and beating all of them, yeah, I think those are some of the moments that you're going to take away. Hopefully for Brazil, as you guys y'all have touched on, this is the time that they need. They need this tournament. They need the support. They need to win over a nation. You know, it doesn't always come fully from a major spectacle like this, but hopefully now, with the performance that they had, getting people behind them, that they can go on and potentially win this tournament. Because out of that top half of the group, I don't see Sweden beating them in Rio. And I think whoever comes out of the bottom half is going to have to do very well on their day come next Friday.
Yeah, I mean, guys, Anne and Sarah, I mean, that penalty shootout, when it went to penalties, tell me what was going through your mind. Were you confident? I'm not sure how many penalty shootouts Australia have been involved in. It's difficult sometimes to find records of penalty shootouts in the past. But how confident were you when it went to penalties? Or was it one of those where you just thought, this is going to be Brazil's time? We've mentioned it already. It's the time where they really need to try and win that gold medal. Its fate is going to be on their side.
you have the bleep already? Because I was pretty much thinking, oh, shit. That's what I just thought. But, you know, a funny story. So the day before, Australia had practiced their penalties, and Alan Stajic said to the group, okay, we're going to do one round of penalties. And they went through and they fluffed them all, like just horrid penalties by the players. And Stadge turned around and went, okay, we're going to do a second round of penalties. And, of course, they nailed them. And to be honest, they probably, I mean, some of those penalties were magnificent. And from players like Chloe Legazzo, who steps up in sudden death and just crushes her penalty. Mm. You know, Laura Alloway, Michelle Heyman, you know, Claire Polkinghorne, Elise Keller-Knight, they just went through and they really did what they had to do. And the last time Australia was in a penalty shootout was in 2010 at the Asian Cup, and they ended up defeating North Korea on penalties then. But apart from that, they don't really play that much sudden death football. And you've got to be proud of the way they did it, particularly when Barbara was off her line for every single one of those penalties.
They were, she was. And I think that's something that should be noted. And by the laws of the game, in reality, those penalties should have been called back.
The one thing, though, look, from the, I know obviously you guys had a different vantage point from being at the stadium, but I actually found it very funny that the two that she saved, she didn't move until the last second. It would have been probably clean anywhere else. But was that something that kind of looked from your guys' angle at the stadium?
Yeah, I was right behind the goal, and I was right behind the goal at the penalty shootout. So I had the big 400-millimeter lens right on there, and it was just noticeable every single time. And I just thought, you know, after the first one, I thought, okay, second one, maybe that will get called. Third one, okay. And by about the third one, I knew they just weren't going to be calling them on the night. It's football. It is what it is, but it was absolutely noticeable.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an interesting matchup. The players are quite untested, I think, in that high-pressure environment. The absolute cauldron of 60,000 Brazilians absolutely cheering or booing them, the Australians, as they stepped up to take their penalties. I thought, you know, they were outstanding on the whole. And Lydia Williams, as a goalkeeper, is probably the best, shot stopper and penalty stopper, and I'd have her above anyone in the world in that scenario. So, you know, she didn't look as comfortable as she normally would. I think the pressure was probably on. Although in saying that, the keepers are never really expected to save penalties. So when she got that hand to Marta's penalty, I thought, well, you know, that was going to give Williams a real boost there. But you know, unfortunately, she just wasn't able to get a hand on the other ones. The Brazilian's penalty taking was absolutely clinical.
Oh, that was a first class penalty shootout.
Yeah.
You know, they just crushed them. And, you know, that the Brazilians had 60,000 screaming for them. The Australians had 60,000 booing for them. And each one of those penalty takers, even the ones that missed, I mean, they missed through the goalkeepers, not through skying them, which is very rare in a penalty shootout. Usually somebody flinches in that manner. So I thought it was a first-class penalty shootout. And it's a cruel, cruel way to go, but I think both teams should hold their heads up high. And the Australia-Brazil rivalry has been going on for over 20 years, started at the 1988 Invitational, where Australia won 1-0. And ever since then, they've just traded matches. And 0-0, I mean, that was anticipated. Australia and Brazil, just the margins between their two matches are so, so small.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think, as you say, it would have been a massive shame if Marta was the player to miss the decisive kick. But equally, I was just as gutted that it was Katrina Gori and Alana Kennedy on the receiving end of that treatment, because you've got there Katrina Gori, wonderfully talented player, 2015 Asian Player of the Year, and Alana Kennedy, just 21 years old, you know, for a young player to be put in that position is not easy for anyone. So be all right. They can hold their heads up high. And again, like you mentioned earlier, this is just the beginning for this Australian team. And they have a lot of experience beyond their years. You know, these are players who've played, some of which have played in two World Cups already, as well as this Olympic Games. So definitely can hold their heads up high. But it is Brazil that go on to Rio. And they will, of course, play against Sweden. And when we come back after the break, and Linda Eriksson will be joining us, we will talk about the final quarterfinal. That was the first quarterfinal on the day, USA against Sweden.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSOZone.
Okay, welcome back. So the final quarterfinal that we need to have a chat about is, of course, Sweden against London 2012 gold medalists, current world champions, the United States. And we're absolutely delighted that she could make it along. We've got Linda Eriksson joining us. Linda, you okay?
I'm good, thanks.
So before really good. Before we speak to Anne and Sarah and JJ, who of course was on the receiving end of a defeat on this one, sum up your emotions and sum up your thoughts after Sweden, against all the odds, against all of the pundits' views, but probably against most of the fans' views as well, came through in a pretty dramatic fashion.
Yeah, I mean, I said myself on the last show that I thought the USA was going to win, and it was going to take some seriously good tactics to win this game, and I think that's what they did. They defended well, and like I think Lisa Dahlqvist said, when it went to penalties, Sweden felt like they had already won, and the Americans seemed scared. So it was all Sweden's to win from that point on.
Did you get that feeling, JJ, that when it went to penalties, it was going to be Sweden's?
Absolutely. And look, you know, going from shows past forward, been very honest and very upfront about my thoughts on the U.S. team. I'm not afraid to, you know, put it out there. I think that Sweden, they out-tactic the U.S. from the first minute to the last minute. There were some times that were a little bit sketchy for both sides, but look, I think the U.S., they did not perform of what they wanted to. You know, their expectation was gold or bust, and this time around it was bust. It's going to be interesting to see how that group is going to come back after this one, because I was talking with a few friends, whether they're in women's football or they're just casual supporters or supporters of the game in general. I don't remember the last time that the U.S., outside of the obvious, being 2007, the Women's World Cup semifinal and the shootout final in 2011, when they have had a demoralizing defeat that early in a major tournament. But end of the day, yeah, I felt pretty confident that Sweden was going to win that penalty shootout, and they did exactly that.
Yeah, I mean, it should be noted it's the earliest exit for a United States team in a major tournament in their history. And Sarah, obviously being neutrals, you can probably give a slightly more objective view on this one. I know that you saw the game before you had to trek off to the stadium to cover Australia-Brazil. What were your thoughts, what were your feelings about that game?
Perfect tactics from Sweden. We're going to talk about the post-match comments. It's shortly, I'm sure.
No, we're not going to cover that. What post-match comments?
I felt like, you know, there are many ways to win a football match, and I think it is direct in a coach's duty to play a way that does not suit their players and give them the best opportunity to win. And Pia did that with her team. She realised that they could be solid defensively, particularly, people have to remember, they lost 5-1 to Brazil in the group stage. They had to go back to basics. They had to go back to what wins championships, which is a solid defensive unit. And they did that. Once it got to penalties, Groobs and I sat there and thought, Sweden's going to win. They just had, you know, you named the penalty takers that they had at their disposal, you know, the likes of Fischer and Dahlqvist and Sager and Schellen, just players who are immensely experienced at club level, and also with the national team, and they just looked confident. They, like JJ said, you know, they felt like they'd already won it, and that was such a mess. That's such a great mentality going into a match, and I couldn't have been happier for Sweden, just the way they persevered.
Yeah, I think as the match built on as well, and USA became more and more frustrated at some of those chances they had in and around the box, you saw the body language of Carly Lloyd just drop away. Her frustration was creeping in, and that's a tough place to be in as the captain, I think, of a team as well, to be displaying that. But even into the extra time, we were looking at each other saying, Sweden are starting to play here.
Yeah.
They were starting to put through, Sager put through an amazing ball up front, and they nearly scored off that. And Sweden, you know, showed us more attack than they'd probably shown for a lot of the tournament. And, yeah, they just built and built and built.
So, and they started to play these 1-2s, not hoofing it long to a run of Olivia, I can never pronounce her name, but I thought it was fantastic. Thank you. They weren't hoofing it long to her runs or trying to hoof it long to the run of Ashellen. They were actually playing some really, really good football. And can I just say, the refereeing in this tournament has been so patchy, because that Ashellen
miles onside
is an absolute travesty.
Miles onside. Linda, I mean, obviously before it came to the penalty shootout, the game finished 1-1. We saw Fridolina Rofel go off injured in, I think it was the first half, and Stina Blackstenius came on. And we were talking in the last show about Swedish players having to step up because they were potentially being too reliant on that experienced spine. And there is a player who really led the line well when she came on, didn't she?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was only, I think, the 16th minute that Rofa was injured. So, I mean, that was a really early place of the game for her to come on, and then to score the goal. It was really well done.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, JJ, we talked about the US maybe not playing to the full potential. We know they didn't play to the full potential. And I think Anne's absolutely right. It might have been Sarah that said it about Carly Lloyd's body language when the game sort of went into extra time and then penalties. And this is in no way an indictment on Carly Lloyd's character, because we know that frustration would have been because they are so used to winning. And obviously they were up against a team who were making it so difficult. But why is it we think the USA didn't do enough? We've already mentioned that Sweden got walloped by Brazil in the first round. They didn't play particularly well against South Africa or China. Is it just a case that they raised their game against the team and USA weren't able to match up?
I mean, this is a question that honestly you could talk about for hours, so I'll try and do my very best to keep it short and simple. Look, Sweden exploited the fact that the US still fail at this time, or at least fail to identify the fact that they cannot break down teams that, you know, have a defensive tactic. They're going to try and make you, you know, beat you on the flanks. And often enough, the U.S. did the job where they got the ball out wide. They looked for service, but the connection wasn't there. So then you try through the middle. Well, that's pretty much clogged up. And then that exploits one of two things. You play that long ball early. And then I think Anna and Sarah hit it on the head. In the second half of that stoppage, or the extra time, they were connecting. They were starting to take advantage of the fact that the U.S. were starting to get a little leggy there. And also, at the same time, center-back pairing is still very questionable. Obviously, you have Sauerbrunn and Johnston in there, but Julie Johnson was coming back from an injury. Becky Sauerbrunn, while she is class on her day, there are times where things can go awry. And they exploited it. There are some holes through the middle. And I thought, obviously, with that goal that was called back, for whatever reason that was called back, because it was a good goal, there is a nice gaping hole between the 3 and 4 position on the field. So you look at that and you wonder, okay, so what could they have done differently? Well, I kind of said this before, and I'm not going to be afraid to broach the subject again. Why is Allie Krieger on the bench in this situation? I have no idea. You know, Tobin Heath, I don't have an issue with her shifting back into a outside back position in a temporary phase, but when you have a player like Megan Klingenberg who struggled throughout the entirety of the tournament, and Allie Krieger gets a sniff of the field, maybe for 4 matches, when she's world-class in her own right, you have to ask a little bit of the question there. Why isn't she, you know, finishing out the match, helping out with her pace, And also having that fresh legs. And, oh, by the way, she scored, what, the winning penalty against Brazil 5 years ago to send them to the World Cup semifinals in 2011. So, you know, these are... Yeah, go ahead.
I was just saying, the interesting thing was that Tobin Heath has actually been the one who's been providing so much service. And then suddenly, if you're going to be using your flanks as your main source of attack and trying to then play it inside to a central Morgan, and you're taking out Heath, suddenly the whole team looks unbalanced. And that they Sweden took advantage of that, I thought, late as the match got deeper and deeper into extra time. And that's, I think, for the US team, and I there are a lot of really great US commentators, I think, who talk about the game really intelligently. But one of the things they've always said is just the unbalanced nature of a US side. And that eventually tells against a team that is experienced and well-drilled.
Yeah, and actually you beat me to the punch there, Anne, because what I was going to say was following on from JJ. When you move Tobin Heath to an outside back position, you are removing a huge amount of talent and threat moving forward. We know that Tobin, for those, JJ and myself, follow the NWSL very closely. She has been the assist queen this year. She has put on so many goals on a plate for her Portland Thorns teammates. As soon as you move her back, all of a sudden you are removing that threat. And Sweden, I'm sure, would have been delighted when they moved her further back. And all of a sudden that threat moving forward isn't there anymore. And I we're talking about unbalance. I saw Kristen Press come on. Kristen Press, we know that on her day, I think she can be the best forward in the world when she's played in the right position and she's confident. But she came on, a player that for me looked like she was lacking a little bit of confidence. And I'm going to ask Anne and Sarah, and because of being neutral in this one, how do we assess the Megan Rapinoe experiment?
Ooh, that's a big question. Linda. I think ultimately it didn't work. That's the brutal, honest truth. And it was not so much in what she did on the park, because I thought when she came on, she was actually quite influential. She was one of the key players in that phase to Morgan eventually getting the equalising goal. But it was a case of how did they use her? And, you know, Jill started her in one match and played her only for 30 minutes to get her into to get some match conditioning. But then to play her basically in the middle of a game where you know or you sense it's probably going to go to extra time, and you obviously know she's only got 30 minutes in her, I just thought that was curious, because you are burning a substitution. You're playing at 1 o'clock p.m. on a hot day in Brazil when you've just come back from Manaus in the rainforest, and you probably need your strongest and freshest legs for as long as possible in that game. It wasn't so much that Megan played and how she played when she was on the park. It was how Jill used her and managed her. And I think the management issue is something, and JJ mentioned Ali Krieger in there as well. You could also talk about the use of Crystal Dunn in there as well. Lindsay Horan, who didn't get much gameplay as well. All of those questions in terms of the management of the team, I think Ellis will definitely have to answer.
That's a great point, and it maybe points out that it wasn't really a very holistic look at that, the substitutions, not a very strategic way of looking at it. It seemed to be that she was throwing Megan Rapinoe in there as a bit of a magic wand.
Hail Mary.
And I mean, having seen Rapinoe destroy teams within a 10-minute, 12-minute period in Olympic matches.
Against us.
Well, yes, and against Canada. I thought, she can whip in a corner. She pulled an Olympico in London, you know. She can just grab the ball and just pass halfway and whip one in. And I thought, well, maybe this is her play. And I think that's not, in a knockout scenario, it can work. But again, it's a bit like a player taking on too many flashy moves, and it's a coach killer. I think probably that move just might have been the team killer.
JJ, have players in that United States team have too many become undroppable?
Yes, absolutely, 100%. I think, you know, you look at it now, again, we've kind of broken down nearly every facet of what happened in terms of the coaching maneuver. So, look, you have some of these players right now that, you know, we look at Rapinoe, for example. If this tournament takes place 2 weeks later, she's probably a lot more fit and could make more of a contribution. But guess what? Fact of the matter is it took place starting on August the 3rd. I am still a believer, probably with a lot of folks that enjoy expressing their views on social media, that Heather O'Reilly should have been included into that team. She is far from where she was years ago, but she still makes an impact every time that she comes onto the field. There's young players that are just waiting and chomping at the bit for their chance, and they just never seem to get that opportunity in a major tournament, or at least in a major situation, as opposed to having some of the same players who, again, granted, we've said it before, this is not a knock on the talent level and what a lot of these players for the U.S. have achieved over the years. But at that time, at that place, at the moment, there could have been somebody else. I don't know who. It's really up to the player on that day, but there could have been somebody else that would have taken the ball by the horns and done something about it.
Linda, you've waited patiently to kind of have your say on where Sweden are now. I mean, as we know, a win against the odds. What's the feeling back in Sweden now in terms of looking ahead? Because we've already mentioned on the end of a heavy defeat against Brazil in the group stages, and now you've got to play them again.
Yeah, I mean, I would say this win is a huge boost for the team and their confidence, and there's definitely talk about medals now. I don't really know what to think about the Brazil game. It's possible they're going to play better, but, I mean, one has to guess that Brazil are going to win.
But then one had to guess that the USA would win over Sweden as well.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So it's really difficult to call now, and, yeah, I don't know. Maybe they're happy with this. They managed to do something well in this tournament, or they'll just want to do even better now and get a medal.
Of the teams that are left, Brazil, Canada, Germany, will this be the team that they will be happiest to come up against, or do you think they would have preferred one of the other two teams?
Oh, that's harsh. Maybe they would have preferred Germany.
Okay, no problem. We mentioned it. We kind of joked about it. I've got to talk about post-game comments.
Yes, we do.
I don't know where to start with this because I couldn't really quite believe my eyes when I read it. Or maybe I could believe it. I don't know.
No one could believe it. Like, you know, at first it only came through one source on Twitter. So people were like, if this is true, what the? So you weren't the only one who couldn't believe it for ages.
Yeah. Well, I've got Grant Wall posted the full comments. We are, of course, talking about Hope Solo. She made some comments after the game. Now, you guys will know, and I will know, that when you go into the mix zone, you are talking to players sometimes 10, 15 minutes after they've come off the pitch. Now, I am not in any way making excuses for Hope Solo, and I will not make excuses for players that are put up in front of the media and say stuff that they probably shouldn't. However, she is a winner, and she was in a position where she has lost a game. She had already faced a little bit of criticism, although she wouldn't have known about that, with the whole gamesmanship over the changing of gloves. Now, you can read into that what you like. Now, obviously, when she was asked by reporters after the game what her thoughts were, this is what she said, and this is what Grant Wall has posted. I thought that we played a courageous game. I thought we had many opportunities on goal. I think we showed a lot of heart. We came back from a goal down. I'm very proud of the team. But I also think we played a bunch of cowards. The best team did not win today. I strongly believe that. I think you saw American heart. You saw us give everything we had today. And asked about why Swedish cowards, she replied, Sweden dropped off. They didn't want to open play. They didn't want to pass the ball. They didn't want to play great soccer. It was a combative game, a physical game, exactly what they wanted and exactly what their game plan was. They dropped into a 50. They didn't try and press. They didn't want to open the game, and they tried to counter with long balls. We had that style of play when Pia was our coach. I don't think they're going to make it far in the tournament. I think it was very cowardly, but they won. They're moving on, and we're going home. Now, the first thing that I pick out of that is I don't think they're going to go very far in the tournament. Sweden are in the semi-finals. That's pretty far in my book. But, I mean, when we saw that, JJ, I'll come to you first, because obviously you're an American. I know Julie Foudy was actually quite embarrassed by it from the comments that she made on Twitter. I wouldn't be surprised if you were as well.
Well, you know, it brings up this interesting point, Kieran, because obviously for a lot of us Americans, we're not so surprised to hear comments coming from this. All you have to look is about, what, a half year ago, and Cam Newton, after the Carolina Panthers lost the Super Bowl, and basically putting on the biggest pouty face in the world and barely answering questions, and said that he just can't do it. And, you know, we go from there and people remark on it. Look, I think if athletes, they get another, 20 minutes to think about it, process it, and just, you know, it doesn't have to be the fanciest. You could always put the cliche, they're the better team, blah, 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 move on, and no one's going to harp about it. But here we are. We're talking about comments that Hope Solo said yet again. And I know afterwards she, you know, said, you know, she kind of covered the bases a little bit and said that, you know, Sweden were the better team and just it wasn't our day, et cetera, et cetera. I just find it a little ironic, folks, that this is a player that thoroughly enjoyed playing under Pia Sundhage 4 years ago, and they played the exact same kind of football and won. So does anybody see that, or is it just me?
Anne?
Yeah, I totally agree. But the other thing, God, I don't even know where to start on this. You know, reading those comments that you, listening to those comments that you read out, Kieran, if she'd left it at her discussion of the US team, I reckon everybody would have gone, you know what, they did. They gave it what they had. They had issues, they had problems, but they kept going. And what the issue is the lack of respect for your fellow professional. Full stop. You know, she would have played against and with a lot of those players for a really, really long time. And everybody is in stressful situations, but she's no stranger to that. She's been in that national team for over a decade. They've been under pressure before, and I just look at that and I go, you know, would Becky Sauerbrunn have made those kind of comments? And no, she would have been hurting in the exactly the same way. And, you know, Alex Morgan, the other players in the team. And I think what is really, really unfortunate about those comments is it takes away from Sweden, the team who won, the team who played what they needed to do to win. And, that just makes me frustrated as a person who covers the game.
And I think as a football fan, I really enjoyed watching Sweden. I really enjoy that tactical play. Yeah. I love a neat defence. There's nothing to be ashamed of. And that's what I don't like about that language as well, about that type of play not being courageous. When that team from, or being cowardly, I should say, that team from Sweden who were running still and actually playing in the back end of that extra time and being beautiful throughout those penalties, there's nothing cowardly in the way that Sweden showed up yesterday that I could even put a finger on.
And no, also, you know, for a player like, for example, Lotta Schelin or Kasavara Aslani, they play in teams where they play really, really attacking football. I think the courage is to sit there and do a job for your team and not leave holes and to track back. I think that's where the courage is, and follow the game plan and execute it to an absolute T.
Absolutely. 100%. Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. I think you have to play to your strengths, and if you try and match up against the United States, they will overpower you. And the reality is that sometimes you might have to change your tactics to accommodate the opposition, and it might not necessarily be the way that you want to play. But if you want to get the job done, that is what you have to do. Now, Linda, I've left you last deliberately because you can now tell us what Pia Sundhage's response was to that.
Her response was, "I don't give a crap. I'm going to Rio and she's going home."
I mean, what was the reaction from people like yourself and any Swedish football fans? How disrespectful did you find the comments? Did you find them disrespectful? Did you find them in any way not surprising? What was the kind of reaction and response from you guys?
I found them disrespectful, and I think the Swedish people in general did, because I have to say, unfortunately, like Anne said, this has taken away focus from Sweden's win. The headlines in Sweden are all about Solo and her behavior. They're about her comments, they're about Pia's response, and they're about Solo destroying her own gloves so she could replace them.
So the focus in the media in Sweden isn't on the win, it's actually on Hope Solo's comments.
Yes.
Yeah, see, that's a shame. That's a shame. Yeah. And that's one thing that is probably the worst thing to come out of it, in my view, is that you've got a Swedish team who, against the odds, have knocked out the gold medalists from London 2012 and Beijing 2008. Mm-hmm. And the papers are talking about comments that have been made by the goalkeeper on the opposing team, and not about, as we've said, a completely uncowardly performance, a very brave performance in which 11 players, well, actually more than 11 players if you include the subs, have given absolutely everything to overcome the best team in the world. We all acknowledge that. We acknowledge that the USA are the best team in the world. And to beat them, you have to play above yourself, and you all have to be on the top of your game. And I think that is the most disappointing thing, that we are now talking about comments made by one individual and actually not the game itself and the fact that Sweden have gone through to play against Brazil. And I think that's a real shame, a real, real shame. But I mean, I guess I'll round it up with you, JJ. Where do the US go now? You know, it's uncommon for them to be in this position.
Yeah, it is. That was a question that was posed to Carly Lloyd immediately after the game. By the way, NBC put together, the non-field interview with Carly Lloyd, and I thought, even in defeat, she was obviously very emotional about it, but put together a very solid interview to the best of really anything that could have done. But, they've got to lick the wounds now. They've got to go back, finish out the NWSL season, fight for their club. And I think, in fairness to them, these are players that are going to need a month away from the game after the club season is over, because they've been going on straight forward, as is every other major international team, for quite a while now in qualification for the 2015 World Cup. So, it's been 24, 26 months of just straight, high-intense football. Players are going to need a break. Hopefully the friendlies are minimal. I know that they announced two right before, actually, I think, what was it, funny enough, right before their third group stage match, where they're going to be playing Thailand and the Netherlands. I hope that there's very few after that. Let them rest, let them recover, and start 2017 with the new energy.
Yeah, agreed. I think we said it after the World Cup last year, very, very full-on schedule for those US players in between winning the World Cup and this Olympic Games. Right, we'll wrap it up there on looking back. Guys, I really appreciate the insight you've given. You've given a lot more than what I could have given on my own, and let's be honest, no one wants to listen to me on my own ramble on for an hour. I want some predictions now. I want you to stick your neck out. So, in simple one-word responses, Anne and Sarah, who's going through, Brazil or Sweden?
Brazil.
JJ?
Brazil.
Linda?
I'm going to say Brazil because it worked so well last time.
Reverse psychology, I like it. And in the other semi-final in Belo Horizonte, we've got Germany against Canada. Sarah?
Canada.
Anne?
Canada.
JJ?
Sticking with my guns, Germany.
Linda?
I have to say Canada.
I'm going Canada as well, and I'm going Brazil in the first one. And I guess final question, and I think I might know where this one's going, from Anne and Sarah. Player of the quarterfinals.
I don't know how that's an easy one.
I asked the question earlier on Twitter, and a lot of people were coming back to me with Lydia Williams.
Look, Lydia Williams, but I think also I would go Janine Becky. I thought she was really, really good for Canada and such a really massive presence. And then also I would go, Lotta Schelin for Sweden. I thought she was a brilliant outlet for them when they needed it often in that game. And I thought she just really stood up as a captain, in a captain's kind of performance. And yeah, so I would pick one from each game, and that's where I'd go.
Sarah?
Oh, look, having missed quite a few of the quarters yesterday due to travel, et cetera, to the games, it's hard for me to call. Yeah, Williams was really strong, but I just thought there were so many outstanding players on the Brazilian team as well.
I'll get you that fence that you guys can sit on next time I see you, all right?
You know what, dude.
JJ?
I love goalkeepers. I'm a former in once a past lifetime myself, a goalkeeper. Hedvig Lindahl, I think she was world class. Came out with a bunch of big saves, punched away a fair few set pieces and corners, and obviously, you know, held her own in the penalty shootout. So yeah, I'm giving my nod to her.
Linda?
I was also thinking Hedvig Lindahl, and then I was also really impressed by Sina Blackstenius. To not really have played at all and then come on as a substitute and score the goal. Really strong mentality there.
Good spread of names there. I would agree with all of them. I think they're all worthy. I think I would add Marta to the fold as well. I know it's a player we expect to step up to the plate, but as JJ said earlier on in the show, 118th, 119th minute, she's running against Australian defenders who are probably 5, in some cases 10 years her junior, and she gave absolutely everything throughout that game, and as I like to say, and I've said it a few times, grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck. But outstanding performances across the board, and despite the fact we only saw 4 goals in the 4 quarters, unbelievable entertainment, and I'm really looking forward to the semi-finals, and hopefully we can get you guys back on after those and have a look ahead to the final. So guys, I really appreciate you coming on. Thank you for your time, especially of course to Sarah and Anne who are in Brazil. And when do you guys fly home?
Well, we've still got another week and a bit here, so 20th and the 22nd respectively.
Well, enjoy the rest of the trip, and JJ and Linda, thanks very much for joining me. Of course, listeners, thank you very much for tuning in. If you want to get in contact, you can do on Twitter or on @WosoZone. Email us by all means on WosoZone@gmail.com. And of course, you can listen to the show in 2 ways: on audioboom.com/channel/WosoZone and on iTunes. So until after the semi-finals, we will speak to you then. Take care of yourselves and bye-bye.